I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Anything's possible!
RSG Renegade Radio. Where real guys talk real sports. Allow me to introduce the illustrious three-man booth.
I want winners.
What's your name, boy?
Mark the Game Changer.
What's your name, boy?
D-Well.
Now, ladies and gentlemen.
T.O.T. Sports Ph.D.
The world famous.
Ray.
They are who we thought they were.
We need more dollars.
RSG Renegade Radio. The floodgates is about to open. Everybody has an opinion.
A man must have a code.
We're taking RSG to the next level.
Hello. You play to win the game.
You could gripe about Mike's game, but I don't see shooting percentage being it.
I mean, I'm not griping the third overall player on my list.
Now, I blame it on Nintendo. It's provocative. Jeez, we don't make excuses. You know, we're not going to make any excuses.
You need to move more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. Can't wait. Can you dig it, sucker?
Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. RSG, Renegade Radio. I'm your host and one-third of the illustrious three-man booth. Mark is a game-changer, here holding you down, as we always do about this time. From 8:30 to 10:30, we're going to take you through the levels as we go through things here on Renegade Radio. Real quickly, I'm going to introduce the rest of the three-man booth, and then we're going to get into the show. Great show lined up, as always. Big things popping in RSG land. We're going to share that with you. Big things popping in the sports world. We're going to get into all of that tonight. All right? So just sit back, you know, get your favorite beverage, relax yourself, and listen up for a little bit. Chat, join us if you feel like it at any time tonight. You can get on. We're taking callers. 1-347-989-0844. Again, that's 1-347-989-0844. Get on with the Real Sports Guys. All right, now, the rest of the booth. To my right, I got my man, D. Wills. Holler at the people.
I got my Calipari swag on tonight. I am feeling good. I'm trying to do it. We're trying to make it happen for the players and for everybody else. I'm just here for the the people listening. I'm just here for y'all.
All right, and to my left, we got the point forward. Running the pinch post. My man, Phil T, Sports PhD. What's good?
I'm feeling good, Mark. Before I got on the air, I listened to your rant on Dwight Howard. To the listeners out there, go on our website, realsportsguys.com, realsportsguys.com. Scroll down till you see Dwight Howard in the Harlem Globetrotter jersey and listen to the 150 seconds of funk that my man, Marcus the Game Changer, just puts on Dwight Howard for his decision to re-sign with the Orlando Magic. That's it. Present.
I always like a young newer to hit him with a present. Hey, I appreciate that. And make sure you check us out on Facebook and Twitter. Again, at realsportsguys.com. Feel free to hit us up there any time during the week. Not just on Tuesday nights, but you can only get the live show on Tuesday nights. So also make sure you tune in, because that's where you're going to get the freshness. All right, that's where it's coming hot off the stove. We hit you with the freshness on Tuesday nights, 8:30 to 10:30 Central Time, RSG Renegade Radio. Now, tonight's show, again, we got a ton to get into. Again, I'm going to be a bit drill sergeant-ish tonight. with keeping us on schedule. We've had a lot of guests. Tonight we're guest-free. So you're just going to get raw renegades, all right? You're just going to get the renegades all night, 2 hours of straight renegade. All right? We just made that a verb, okay? That's what we do around here. We renegade. So coming up with the funky editorial, we will be talking about the Kentucky Wildcats coming off a national championship victory last night. We're going to put this team in an appropriate historical context. We're going to talk about Coach Cal. Where does this win put him in regards to the college coach pantheon? And then we're also going to talk about the reloading process, the one-and-done rule. So we're going to kind of get everything because there's a lot going on with this team. So we're going to get into all things Kentucky during a funky editorial. From there, we're going to talk about we're going to get back into our top 20 hip-hop songs. We're going 10 through 6, so we'll get the first round of that. I'll take you through my 10 through 6 top hip-hop songs of all time. Then we're going to get into the five on the black-hand side. We're going to reset the tournament, talk about everything that we saw, different perspectives in the five on the black-hand side. You know how we do with that. Take you through five things, five insights. And everybody's going to kind of chime in, and we're going to kind of freestyle it from there. Then PhD is going to take you through his 10 through 6 top 20 hip-hop songs of all time. We're going to go off the dome for a little bit. A few topics we're going to hit. Tiger Woods being favored at the Masters. RG3 versus Andrew Luck. Who you taking? Ryan Leaf got arrested again, just in case you wanted to know. OKC. How they bout it? OKC's been bringing it lately. And then I say Kevin Love. What do you say? Kevin Love's been balling. Where are we ranking him now as we look at the top 15 to 10 players in the league? Is Kevin Love cracking that? And Ricky Williams is getting a statue at the University of Texas. So we're going to get into that a little bit because that's just a funny idea. Then we got D. Wills' top 10 through 6 of his top 20 hip-hop songs. We have the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. We're going to preview next week's show, and then we're going to go into the shutdown. All right, so that's tonight's show. Again, sit back, relax. We're going to take you through everything. But before we do that, a quick word from our sponsor, Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
With the conclusion of the tournament, it also represents the conclusion of the Resistance Digital Solutions Real Sports Guys Tourney Challenge, our second year doing it. This year, we had a sponsor, very excited. As many of you who may not know about the challenge, the key to the challenge is can you outdo the Real Sports Guys? I will say that I ended up in first place, so I held it down for the fellas in the RSG resistance movement. We won't talk about what the other fellas did, but we did say that we would give prizes out to those folks who placed. And tonight we have the pleasure of having the president of Resistance Digital Solutions here, Larry Randall here. Larry, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How you guys doing tonight?
All right. Well, Larry, you won it last year, which is odd. You won it, and then you know this year we had the opportunity to have you and your company sponsored attorney. Before we get into the winners, what were just some of your general thoughts about the tournament and how did your brackets go?
Well, my brackets was okay until Missouri lost.
Yeah, they got us both, man.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people had Missouri moving on, so that wasn't really big, but I think one of the biggest parts of the tournament that I observed was the fact that mid-majors kind of got put back in their place after the second round. I mean, you know, the Ohio story was great, and, you know, Lehigh winning was great, but that second round rolled around and, you know, they got beat. You know, Murray State was a big story the entire year, and I knew that they were going to end up playing Marquette, and I was like, well, this is going to really determine if they were good or not. And come to find out, they weren't good. I mean, they were good for their conference, but they weren't exactly, you know, worthy of being in the top, I say, five or six that most people were saying. So that was my overall observations of the tournament. Individually, I really like Davis for Kentucky, but he need to get a strength and conditioning coach, because if he's going up against fours in the league, I mean, to me, I think Thomas Robinson is more NBA ready than Davis is, at least body wise. So, you know, even though he's going to be the first pick in the draft, he's the type of guy that I would tell maybe you should stay in school one more year and put on a few pounds before you go in the league and playing against the big four. So that was about it, though, in the tournament.
Well, you know, on behalf of RSG, we want to thank you for being our official sponsor and kicking it off. And we had a lot of great participation. It was a great tournament. I want to thank you for that. As we said, we're going to be giving out prizes. And so I'm going to hand to name the folks who finished top three after me. And who we're gonna award.
don't forget the after me part.
We
have love for our fans.
Congratulations to you, Devon. That's a good show, my friend. So I'll just start it off with basically the three players or the three participants. The third place winner was P.J. Bowman. P.J. Bowman will receive a $25 off gift certificate to Resistance Digital Solution towards his next purchase. Congratulations, P.J. Bowman. The second place winner is Mr. Ramsey Baker. He will receive a 2K12 sports pack, which consists of NBA 2K12 and MLB 2K12 for Xbox or PlayStation 3, whichever system he would like. And the number one participant was Ben Miller. He'll be awarded a Lenovo X120E netbook that has over a $450 value, and that is brought to you by Resistance Digital Solutions.
Well, Larry, thank you again. We look forward to doing it next year. I know we're going to do it bigger and better next year, but we definitely had a successful first run with you as a sponsor. And, you know, we couldn't have done this without you. We appreciate it. And until next time we have you on, we definitely appreciate it. You have a good evening.
All right. No problem. You guys have a good one.
All right.
Take care, Larry.
Later, guys.
All right. Back to you, Game Changer. There you go. Back to you, Game Changer.
All right, so we're going to transition again. Much appreciation to LR for holding us down as our first sponsor and a huge supporter of what we're trying to do. So we want to make sure that we support what he's trying to do with Resistance Digital. Make sure you get in, you get all your electronic and your technical needs from my man LR, Larry Randall. He's going to hook you up, give you solid prices. Check that out. Please check that out. ResistanceDigital.com. So make sure you check them out. Now, on to the next one. We just wrapped up the tournament challenge. Tournament just wrapped up. Funky editorial. We gonna get into it a little bit. So let's lay it down like we always do. A lot of national talk has been going around about the strength of this Kentucky team, where it ranks historically, how good is it really. So, you know, the national guys have had their turn to say what they want to say about it. Now you come to us to get the real. All right? And so we're going to lay it on you real quick. Here you go.
Fellas, the one thing we need to say, shall we say it, y'all? Melvin, right. Jimmy, right. Coleman, Ryan, say it.
Yeah.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
All
right. So, RSG, Funky Editorial, staple of the show, as we always do, we get into a topic that's floating around national radio, national sports talk, national, you know, blog sites,
media outlets, and we kind of come at it from our perspective. And again, you're only going to get this here. We're going to take a lot of different places that they won't take it. So, Kentucky, I'm going to throw it out to PhD first. Kentucky, where do you put this team historically? And let's give them an appropriate, again, I want to make sure I emphasize, I put a lot of emphasis on that word appropriate. Appropriate historical context. What do you place in PhD?
Well, I don't put them in any special categories, such as, oh, they're the top 10 team, you know, ever, or they're the best team since this time period. I just don't see that with this team. I think they were the best team this year, okay? They won a championship this year. And one of the reasons I think it's tough to compare them in historical context, because college basketball has changed so much in the last 5 or 6 years with the whole one-and-done concept, and you don't see guys staying for 3 or 4 years anymore. So because of that, I don't think they would be able to hold a straw on some of the better teams we've seen in the last quarter of a century, the UNLVs, the Dukes. I don't think that they would be very competitive against those teams. So, you know, I've got a team lined up who I would compare them against once we get to that. But they were very impressive, but I don't think they were impressive in historical context.
Laid it down. D. Wills, chime in.
I'm going to say this. Very talented. Impressive commitment to defense. They're not one of the top teams of all time. I would argue that they're probably not one of the top teams in the last 10 years. I think that you can talk about the 2004 Huskies team that had Okafor and Ben Gordon, had a pretty deep lineup that I thought would be able to challenge this team. The 2005 Carolina group with Felton in that crew and McCants, I thought was very talented and could have played well against the squad. And then my team that I'm going to compare them to. What I think is impressive about them, I think it's always impressive when you have a talented team that sacrifice. And I think that's probably the best thing that we can really focus on.
So, well said, brother. I agree with both of you. I'm not putting them in any – we're not going to do the whole hyperbole thing that the national media loves to do. They love to take things and really kind of blow them out of proportion. They're a good team. They're national champion. Never can take that away from them. As far as all time, I think you have to understand that this is a different era. This is just a very different place to be. You know, I think if you were to plot this team down in the mid-90s, in the early 90s, they might be a 3-16 squad. And they'd all be coming back the next year to try and get a little further in the tournament. But ever since, you know, KG kind of rebroke the seal on the high school to pros pipeline, the college game hasn't been the same since. There hasn't been as much depth. There hasn't been as much quality at the top. You know, I think it's deep now. There are a lot of good teams, but I think some of those mid-majors are able to compete because they have juniors and seniors going against freshmen and sophomores at the bigger schools, at the more prestigious programs. So that levels the playing field a bit. So, no, they're not one of the greatest teams of all time. And, you know, I'm real interested to see who we all picked as our team that we would compare them to. Because I think I'm going to go on a limb. I think we all kind of went with – I just got a funny feeling we all might have went with the same team.
I got a feeling as well.
Just being who we are.
I'll go ahead
and throw it out there, all right? Fab Five. That's who I went with if I was going to compare them to a team. I went Fab Five. just because of the success at a young age. I think if they were playing during the Fab Five era, that would be them. I mean, that's why if the Fab Five were playing now, the Fab Five would run through the NCAA right now. Run through it. Why? Because the reason the Fab Five didn't win was inexperience in that game. They didn't win any championships because of the lack of experience, because they were young. And back then, experience was a huge factor because talent was pretty even in a lot of instances. When you had big schools against little schools, when you got to the finals, Final Four of the tournament, everybody was loaded.
That's right.
And oftentimes what it boiled down to was experience. Everybody had three or four guys who were going to be pros. When you got down to that Final Four, to that round of four. And so what I think prevented the Michigan team from winning any titles was they didn't stay long enough. I think if they had stayed, you know, if Weber had stayed till he was a junior, senior, he definitely would have walked away with a ring. Rose had to stay a couple more years till he was a senior. If that group had stayed together for 4 years, they would have won multiple rings. I think those last 2 years they would have won rings because they had the experience of learning from what they had done before. That's what I look at this team as. They won it in this era because it's a little bit weaker. But I think if they were playing in the Fab Five era, they would be a comparable squad of players where you had just a ton of talent. They were young as heck, but they did their thing. So that's the team I compared them to, the Fab Five. D. Wills, who's your comparison?
And I thought about the Fab Five, but I wanted to try to compare them to a team, as I was saying, within this last 10 years, and particularly more recently with more of the one and done and more. And so I compared them to the 2007 Gators. Where I think the Gators may have had the advantage, and we can debate about, you know, freshmen versus sophomores versus – but I think in terms of the type, I think they were similar teams. But I think the Gators, I think the type of team that could beat this Kentucky team are the Gators. When you think about the fact that they had a front line of Orton and Noah, and then you have Brewer on the wing who could expand and push back, and then the backcourt was a nice backcourt. When you think about Humphreys, I think, and Green, I think that team had the same type of talent and commitment to defense, which allowed them to be back-to-back. And I would think that this Kentucky team, if they stayed together, would probably do the same thing. But what the uniqueness was that those two teams committed to the defensive end and were so talented and sacrificed. They all sacrificed. If individually, though, each of them could have been stars on other teams, but they really sacrificed. And some of the players who stepped up weren't just the notable stars. You know, so if you think about like Noah and Orton, some of the other players who stepped up, like Lamb and some of these other folks that weren't Davis, kind of helped him get over the top. So that was my comparison.
A follow-up for both you gentlemen. Marcus, do you think that the Fab Five could have beat that Kentucky team from last night?
Oh.
Yes. The Fab Five, their top three players, I would say, are Howard, Rose, and Weber. That alone, I think, overpowers because Davis is good, but as Larry pointed out, there were some times where Davis was trying to post up on the block, and he couldn't move his man. To me, that's a worry, because he ain't Durant. Kevin Durant can get away with putting up 135 once. I don't think Anthony Davis is Kevin Durant, so he's got to get stronger. Weber was a man. Juwan was a man. You know, they were thinner at that time, but they could put it on you on the block. So I think he would have had a problem with either one of those guys, and both of those guys were skilled enough where they could step away from the bucket and kill you. And then you got a 6'8 point in Jaylen. I think his length would give Teague, and you could put him on Gilchrist, you know, Kid Gilchrist, and give him fits. Neither team was super deep. Jackson and King were great athletes who didn't take anything off the table. They put enough on the table, and he didn't take a ton off. So I go with the 5-5 hands down.
Go ahead, Phil.
I would even argue that Michigan had more depth than Kentucky.
Yeah.
I mean, they brought off a really quality big and Eric Riley off the bench.
We think it alike.
Anytime, you know, anytime you can bring a quality big off, and remember now you're talking to three Fab Five historians here, okay? I mean, anytime you can pull off a big who led the Big Ten in rebounding back then before the Fab Five came, you're doing something special. You're bringing off Tally off the bench. He was a Mr. Basketball. You know,
yeah.
Palinka, Vasco. I mean, they had some depth where they could go 7 to 8 deep. Where Kentucky, outside of that kid, that was the only senior on the team, Miller, I believe. That's it. That's all they had. That's it.
Yeah, man. They brought in the one kid. I think his name is Kyle Witter or whatever.
Yeah.
The tall white kid. And he came in and you can just tell he needs to spend all summer in the weight room. Like, he needs to get a work study in the weight room.
Yeah. But he's going to be a kid that
can play. He can finagle a couple bucks.
He's going to be a kid that can play. And also what I would add is that I think the person that might give him the most trouble is someone like Howard. The way to beat Kentucky is to have, they were talking about it, you know, a stretch four, having somebody who can hit that mid-range jump shot, big man who can step out a little bit, and they had the ability to do that as well. And that's why also, you know, when I talked about Florida, it's having some versatile players.
Right.
That's the kind of team you need to have to play this Kentucky team.
And
then cerebral players. Yes.
Yeah. You know, and I'm going to throw a quick point in before we get to PhD's team, but that idea of the stretch four I think is real important because, you know, I coach women's basketball. I watch the girls' game, the women's games a lot, and Stanford did some real interesting stuff against Brittany Griner when they played in the Final Four game. They had Ogumike, Naka, she stepped away from the basket, and what they did was they ran cutters behind her. So they ran backdoor cuts on the backside, pulled Griner out, and that opened up layups. That's what you got to do to a team like Kentucky with a player like Davis, who covers as much ground as he can cover. Pull him away from the basket and run people behind him.
Yeah.
Run players behind him, have players cutting behind him and looking for passes there. It's running action behind that player as you pull them out. That way you can get some easy opportunities because as long as he can see you coming, it's a wrap.
Right.
It really is, man, because that kid, he is an impact player on defense. He's got a long way to go offensively. But on the defensive end, the dude's got the tools. PhD, who you got?
I'm taking that 2001 Duke team that beat Indiana in the championship game. That Duke team that featured Jason Williams, and let's not forget, Jay Will was one of the coldest players. I mean, I would say if you put together five players, you know, 15 players for the decade of the 2000s, you might put Jason Williams on that team. He was tough. Jason Williams, Chris Duhon, who defensively, Duhon, I think, would do an excellent job on Lamb. Dunleavy, Shane Battier, and Carlos Boozer. So if you line these guys up and you match them against the top five, and again, this Duke team had depth. They could go 7 or 8 deep, even 9 deep. You know, you look at Boozer against Anthony Davis. It's kind of a watch to me. I think
that's not a watch. Davis has got him. Boozer hates Lynn. To this day, as a 10-year vet in the league, he hates Lynn.
Okay, all right. So it's my list, and I'm going to go with that.
Roll right on to it, Father. Apologies.
He wanted to make sure that he wanted to clarify that. It's my list.
Right. You know, I'm going to go, it's somewhat of a watch because you look at how skilled Boozer was offensively. To your point, Marcus, I think Boozer could make Davis step out. And Boozer could make a college three. He could stretch you out to 15 to 20 feet. Okay? So I think that somewhat neutralizes Davis. Now, on the defensive end, Davis is still going to shine. But on the offensive end, I think Boozer could easily get you 15 and 10, easily. Okay, so I kind of call the wash. I'll give you that one to Davis. I'll give that one to Davis. Then you got Battier and Kid Gilchrist. I think that's a complete wash. If anything, I might even lean towards Battier on that one because Battier is able to stretch the floor a bit better than Kid Gilchrist. And then Battier was a great defender. Okay.
And a senior.
That's right. That's right. A lot of experience there. Then you got Dunleavy and Terrence Jones. Terrence Jones, if he plays to his potential, like he did on a couple of possessions last night, you know, he could give Dunleavy fits. But at the same time, Dunleavy was a great three-point shooter. He could put it on the deck. He could do a lot of different things. So in my mind, that's somewhat of a wash, too. Now, where I think Duke would pull away is in the backcourt. Jason Williams, Lamb T, whoever you want to throw at him, good luck. You know, if you want to put Kid Gilchrist on them, all right, now with Battier and Dudley, we're going to bust you. Okay? Duhon is going to be able to shut down Lamb. And Lamb reminded me, again, I'm going to take you back to a Fab Five reference. When the Fab Five lost the sophomores, and Donald Williams for North Carolina, 21, was the MVP shooting those threes. That's what Lamb reminded me of last night. This is a guy, if you gave any space, if you gave him the rock and rhythm, he would just bust you up all night. Okay?
Yeah.
I mean, he's that guy. He's that guy at the park, fellas, that he just shoots and then turns around, runs back on D when the ball's still in the air. Because he just knows, you know, it's going to hit that chain. Just schwack him on. I mean, that's what Lamb was looking like last night. So I'm using Duke 2001, and I think Duke 2001 team easily beats Kentucky, you know, by 4 or 5 possessions. You know, 8 to 12 points, as Hubie Browns would say.
Hey, but that's accurate, man. You got an accurate assessment. And don't forget, they had Nate James coming off the bench, who is the McDonald's All-American. And the key factor, man, you forgetting the X factor. They had the president's body man on the team, Reggie Love.
That's right.
If this cat could be
right.
Close to the president, man, that's got to be worth something, right?
That's right.
Got to be worth something.
Got to be worth
Reggie
something,
Love
man.
Reference. We made it. We didn't make it to the night.
Something.
Reggie Love reference. Reggie Love.
So we all agree that the Kentucky Wildcats, the 2011-12 champions, are a good team, but where they stand in the pantheon of the all-time teams. They're probably not even in the building yet. They're not in the building. You know, the top 25 all-time teams get in the building. Everybody else is out in the parking lot, and they may have a parking lot, parking spot way in the back of the parking lot right now as far as champs go. So they're good, but they got some considerable flaws and some considerable deficiencies as far as what they really are. Now, the other piece of this whole puzzle is Coach Cal. John Calipari, much maligned, very polarizing cat, was at UMass, got to the Final Four, you know, had the teams with Camby and Lou Rowe and Padilla. I can never remember the other kid who played in the backcourt, and it's driving me nuts because I used to rock with that team on the old Coach K basketball on Sega Genesis. UMass was my squad. And I can't remember the other guard. It was another cat with a Latino last name, and it was Edgar Padilla, and then there was another cat, and I can't remember his name to save my life right now, man. I've been thinking about this for the last week. What was that cat's name? I'll look it up eventually. But anyway, he was at UMass, got him to a Final Four, and some improprieties happened. They had to vacate that. Happens. Goes to Memphis. Gets them to a couple Final Fours, gets them to a national championship game. They lose it, national runner-up. Some impropriety. Okay, two times. Once is the once. Okay, that happens. Twice, I'm looking at you sideways. So that's Coach Cal. Now he goes to Kentucky. He leaves Memphis. Again, he leaves while the investigation is happening, while the investigation is taking place. He leaves the University of Memphis. It's kind of a questionable move, all right? It's a little questionable. We can talk about that, though. Goes to Kentucky. one of the top two jobs. I think you're looking at Kentucky, and as far as all-time historical relevance, Kentucky, UCLA in college basketball are probably one of the two most coveted jobs. He's at Kentucky. He gets the Kentucky job. This is the place to be. This is the top of the hill. And, you know, he starts, the one-and-done rule goes into effect, and he starts doing his thing. He starts bringing in class after class after class, and now he finally gets one. He finally gets that title. Because Kel Tyre has always been known as a great recruiter. He's always been viewed as somewhat of a sketchy character. No one has ever really questioned his ability to coach, I don't think. I think people understand and recognize he's a good coach, but also think they kind of backhanded, that they would give him the backhand compliment of being a great recruiter to kind of slight his coaching a bit, just to say, hey, you always got good. You always got the guys, and you should be winning more, but you haven't won one yet. So that validates what we're trying to say, is that you're all right, but you're shady, and that's why you always get those guys. So it was, you know, he's taking a lot of knocks. A guy who's taking a lot of hits, a lot of knocks, some earned, maybe some not valid, but he's taking the hits. Where does this win put him in the context of top coaches? We talked about, you know, Facebook, we all listed our top five coaches in college basketball right now. Cal wasn't on my list. Did you guys have him on your list? PAD, did you have Cal on your list?
No, sir.
Would he be on your list now?
No, sir.
Why?
Well, for me, and Game Changer, I'm going to help you out. Carmelo Travieso. Carmelo Travieso.
Yeah, Travieso. Yes.
I was about to say, yes. Travieso. You know, they should yell out, Travieso, hit some threes.
That's right. That's right.
Thank you.
You're welcome, man.
Been killing me.
So Calipari, honestly, and Calipari has been trying so hard to get this message out since the game last night that, you know what, fellas, my legacy won't be set just because we won a game tomorrow or we won a game tonight. And I somewhat agree with him. For me, when I look at college coaches, you know, if you look at my top five list, I've got some mid-major coaches there, like Mark Few, Shaka Smart, Brad Stevens, because I just think it's so impressive, you know, what they can do at a mid-major with limited resources to play with the big boys, you know. And so when I look at Coach Kel, I think he's a Hall of Fame coach, period, even if he didn't win the championship. When you look, he took UMass and Memphis to the Final Four and Memphis to the championship game. And, you know, these are mid-major slash major conferences. UMass was in the A-10 at the time, Memphis Conference USA. And to me, that means more than winning a championship in Kentucky, where you get the cream of the crop all the time. Now, to his credit, okay, and again, I think he's a Hall of Fame coach, so this is not criticism, but to his credit, I think it's amazing how he's able to meld these top players together, you know, these top 50, top 100 players together and get them to buy in to playing defense. And to me, that's a sign of an excellent coach, which is why Izzo will always be on my top five list.
Jump in, D. Wills. Well, wait, you had Cal in your list, right?
Yeah, I had Cal at number five. And what I said is that, and what I said is part of it is, and so I don't get into the whole conversation about one and done, what he did. Well, I said is Cal is probably one of the most honest coaches when it comes to that. That he understands reality, and he didn't set the rule. But this is a guy without a championship put together a great resume. And arguably, you know, as good as his UMass teams were, UMass wasn't a juggernaut program. I mean, he really brought that program to life. UMass has a history. I mean, really, Cal's time at UMass really took that to another level. His ability to get, and he's always had this ability to get talented players to play together. I think the art of coaching is really being able to motivate. X and O's are great, but if you can't get players to commit to something, you're not going to win. That is, I mean, Marcus, I know you say you coach, and you know that.
At the end of the day, you have to figure out how to motivate players to do something together. And he does that as well as anyone. His game management down the stretch, people would argue, in the game against Kansas and things like that. But he's in there on a regular basis, plenty of 25-win seasons. So he gets a bad rap in a way that sometimes I don't think it's fair that he gets a bad rap. I hear a lot of these coaches taking the moral high road. I've heard Bobby Knight be very critical of him, whereas Bobby Knight got sketchy past, yet he might be on somebody's top five list in terms of how he's treated players, things that he's done that, you know, should be questioned. So I think all these coaches have issues. Some of them are well-documented. Others are yet to be documented. So that's why I have Cal there. And the championship last night for me sealed it.
Okay. I didn't have him in mind. It was really not because there was anything I didn't like about Cal, but there was guys I liked more than Cal. There are guys, that, and again, my list consisted of, you know, Shaka Smart, John Thompson III, Izzo, Coach K, guys like that who I really dig and who I would like what they do. And I had Oriem on there because, again, I coach on the women's side. So I had Oriem on there too. And Oriem to me and Cal are similar in that they do a ton with a ton of talent. And then that, you know, when people talk about Phil Jackson, Pat Riley, coaches like that from the NBA, I think that's where guys like Oriem and Cal fit. In my mind, as far as that coaching lineage that they come from, they're good. They're solid. They're good enough X's and O's guys. Like Jackson was a good enough X and O guy, but he went and got great X and O guys by bringing in Jim Clemens and Tex Winter to help with the defensive systems and to help install the offense. What these guys do is they take kind of a football approach, where you have the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, and I'm the head coach. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a system that allows us to be successful. I'm going to create an environment and a philosophy that allows us to be successful. I'm a CEO of this thing, is what guys like Phil and Al. Go ahead.
I would argue that that's coaching.
No, I agree. I'm not saying that as a slight. I'm just saying it's a different brand of coaching. In the same way I applaud Gino for doing it, I think Cal does a great job of it too. And taking talent and winning with talent, it's not easy to do. It really
not
isn't. Like, people say, oh, he got the best players. Yeah, but they got the biggest egos. And to me, being able to manage that is what Phil was great at. It's why he could take on a Kobe. It's why he could take on a Mike. There aren't a lot of coaches who can do that and not be overpowered by their personalities. And I think Cal is of that lineage where he can take on these guys and these, you know, big-time high school guys, get him into the system, and Izzo too. Get him into the system and get him to play as a team under a philosophy, under a goal. And I think he was at the pinnacle of that this year where he had a group of guys who were really buying it. He was selling it. He's always selling it. He's always selling it. But these guys were buying it. And I think he's had teams that maybe have been more talented. I think the group with John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins was more talented. I think that team was more talented just with those two players alone. I think they had more talent, but I don't think Cousins and Wall really bought in because there was some pushback during that season from those players in regards to how are they going to interact with Cal and how that relationship was going to look. You know, Rose and his group at Memphis, they bought in when he had CDR and he had Derrick Rose and those guys at Memphis and Dozier. Those guys bought in. This group really bought in and really had a selfless attitude, and that's what he's selling, and that's what he's trying to get kids to do because he knows he can get the kids with the talent. So I picked the guys I picked not as a slight to Cal, but I appreciate what Cal does. I really do because it's a different type of coaching. It's a different kind of coaching, and it's not a greater than or less than. It's equally as difficult. It's equally as tough, and that's a big part of coaching is being able to manage personalities.
And I'll go over my list, but one of the things if you watch the post game conference, he checked Davis. I don't know if you heard that when they were talking about Davis or something about being 1-for-10 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
he said, I was open, coach.
He said, because you were 1-for-10. You see, I'm checking. I mean, that right there, that right there, see, to me, that dispelled a lot about Cal. You know, there's no freelancing around him. And Davis, what? Davis sat up. Right? That's an aspect of Cal you don't often see. But you saw the respect of all those players in terms of how he runs it. So I those are things I think we need to be citing as well. And that is an important part of coaching and building a winning culture that you have to do. I had Izzo as number one. I had Coach K 2, Rick Pitino 3. I had Bo Ryan 4 and Cal 5. So I wanted to make sure I got that out. I know, Game Chair, you're going to try and sway me and hit me over the head with something on my list. But you might pull out that white dog. But I'll let you know I got the dog catcher here in my back.
Right, I mean, he's trying to take my list over. I learned my lesson. It's your list.
You know, before you know it, he done scratched it and mixed it up. You're like, what did I have on my list? Oh,
hey, I've been known to be a little bit aggressive, in my opinion.
Oh, he messed up my whole list. What did I have on there?
Pick up a few fouls here and there. It's just the way I play it, man. It's just the way I play it.
I understand that.
So, the one and done rule. Cal has finally taken a team and of guys who are probably going to be leaving. It's still up in the air as to whether or not all of them are leaving. He could lose anywhere from 4 to 6 guys out of this team. I think the 3 guys who are really leaning towards going for sure are Jones, Davis, and, excuse me, Kid Gilchrist. Miller's graduating, so he's got to go. You know, he ain't got to go home, but he got to get up out of here.
That's right.
So it's time for Miller to move on. So, and then Teague, I think he should come back. Who knows if he will. And then you got Lamb, who he's a late first-round pick. He'll probably have a decent career in the league. Could he earn himself a few more G's if he stayed? Yep. He probably could. But now Cal can go in the living room and say, look, you come in and we could really wreck shop with this thing. Now, he's got a good class. He's got a good, solid class of kids coming in next year. He's got 3 or 4 guys who are really solid. But the 2 top players, one is a center from Massachusetts, rocking a high-top fade. I mean, like a serious box. This ain't like one of them little cute, I'm going to give it a shot boxes. This is like, I'm all in on the box. Nerlens Noel, YouTube him, shot-blocking beast. I mean, you thought Davis was a beast blocking shots. This dude is, I mean, he blocks some shots, and of course he's going against high school kids, but he really does look Russell-esque blocking shots. I mean, tipping it to himself, you know, every now and then he'll just swap one off the, you know, off the supports in the building or something. You know what I'm saying? Just knock one off the scoreboard, man. So YouTube, man, he's got YouTube videos of just his blocks. So the kid's a talent. The kid's a defensive talent. And then you have Shabazz Muhammad, a swing man out of Las Vegas, who pushed me in the mind of JR, of a young JR Ryder, without the crazy and without the weed habit, but just his physicality and his ability to be explosive, he really reminds me of JR. So those are the 2 kids who are at the top of this class, and right now they're undecided on where they're going to go. I'm sure Cal is probably in Massachusetts today, and he'll probably be in Vegas tomorrow at both of these kids' doorstep, really trying to get them at Kentucky, because if he gets them at Kentucky, it really does change the complexion of his class, where it goes from being a good class. Right now they don't have the top class in the country. if he gets one of those guys, if he can get one of those guys, they get into, they're probably one of the top three classes. If he gets both of them, it's a wrap, and we'll be talking about his team again next year in the Final Four. But this is kind of a lot he's created for himself. Is once it's over, once the season wraps, and you kind of heard it from him in the press conference yesterday, where he was like, you know what, I don't even really get to celebrate this because these cats is leaving, and I got to get a whole new squad. So, yeah, this is great. We got to go to work.
That's right.
You know, remember that old Living Color skit with the Jamaican family, the Haymon? Haymon, you got to go to work. That's what Cal was like at the press conference, man. He's like, yeah, this is great, man. I got to get on the job, man. I got to go get some more kids. If you don't know, a lot of these cats might be gone, and I got to get another team, which is what he's doing every year. He's not filling holes. He's getting a new roster. So that's a different level of that's a different way of doing it. Is that a good way? Is that sustainable? PAZ, you think that's a sustainable way for Cal to run things?
I do, and, you know, I mean, before I get into this thought, one thing that got me on Coach Cal's boat, on his bus, on his car, whatever you want to call it, was I remember back in that 95-96 season, Marcus Camby was unconscious. He took a blow to the head. Knowing we know now, he probably would have been out for the rest of the season.
Out for the rest of his life.
Right. And he was unconscious on the court for like 5 to 10 minutes. Coach Cal, instead of doing what most coaches would do, let the trainer take care of it, take him back in the locker room, to the hospital, Coach Cal left that game and went to the hospital with Camby in the middle of the game and let his assistants coach it out. So I think to Devon's point, there's something very authentic and respectable about Cal that speaks well to parents and young men. And that's a tough balance, but he's been able to do it successfully. Now, to your question, Marcus, I think the model that he's following is the best available one. Get the best players in, even if you're only having them for a year, and use that as a selling point when he's talking to juniors and seniors that are in high school. Listen, you come here, chances are you're going to be able to play right away. I don't have a deep bench. I won't over-recruit for your position, so I'm not going to recruit 5 point guards. If you're a point guard right now, I'm going to bring you in to play point guard. There might only be one other point guard in the entire program that legitimately has a chance to play. So now, if Coach Cal recruits you, okay, and he tells you that you're a project, well, I think by your junior senior year, you know, by your junior senior year, you might be able to contribute. You know, I might stay away from that and, you know, go that mid-major route. Okay. because in that system, you might never ever see the court. You might never see the court. You know, you bust in your butt and take that red shirt year. You coming in as a fourth year junior and that fifth year senior, you're expecting to play. You might not ever get that shot at Kentucky with Coach Cal. So
no,
I like
no.
his motto, and I think it's sustainable. I do.
Now I agree with you. I think for him, it's working. He's the guy doing it. He's the guy kind of embracing it. He's embraced it. You know, you have some of the old guard coaches, Coach K. You know, even I think Izzo to an extent, Calhoun. Some of those guys don't really embrace it. Like, you know what? It is what it is. If they gotta come, they gotta play for somebody. You know, because before the rule was kids would go straight out of high school. So a lot of these guys, LeBrons and the Kobe's and the Garnets, they're going straight to the league because they can and they can play there. They can thrive there. But I think Cal looked at it and said, well, hell, if they gotta come, they gotta be in college, I'm gonna go get them. I'm gonna go get them because they gotta play for somebody. I'd rather coach them than coach against them. I'd rather have them play with me. And then I go get the next one next year because there's another group coming behind them. And I tell these guys, hey, look what I did for that crew. And now you can go in and say, look, you come in, and the guys before you bought in, if you, because that was the one thing he couldn't do. He could sell a pro thing. He could sell the pro thing. He could say, look, you come in, I'll get you ready, you'll be in the league in a year. I do it every year. This is what I do. You get to play, you get to showcase yourself, and if you play well, you're going to go. All right? I got guys, you know, with Daniel Orton. I got guys who barely played for me, first-round pick. So come on in, I'll get you ready, I'll get you out there, you'll make it. As long as you can play, you'll make it, and I wouldn't recruit you if you couldn't play. He can go in any kid's living room and stay on that message. Now he can go in and say, look, not only will I get you to the league, and not only do I want you to go to the league, and not only do I expect you to leave after a year, because I think that's the other piece. He's like, look, if you come in and you do the things I want you to do, you're going to be gone, all right? You're going to be able to go to the league. And I think that's a message that a lot of coaches sell short, and I think a lot of coaches don't capitalize on that. Like, look, I'm the type of coach, if you come in and you buy into what I'm teaching you, I've done my job. I'm not going to be sad about that. I got you ready for the next level, which is what I'm supposed to be doing. We're going to win games at it, but now you can, while we're at it, but I'm supposed to get you ready for the next level. And that's what he sells kids is that, look, I care about you. I care about your future. Sells families on. I care about your son's future. If your son is ready to go after this first year, I'm going to tell him to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to tell him to go. But now he can go in and say, look, not only can you get all of that, but if you buy in, we can win some titles. And I'm sure he was saying that before, but now he's got patient zero. He's got the case study. You know, he can come in and put on a 11-12 highlight tape. He can play the one shine in the moment clips and feel good about them. You know, he can go in the living rooms and play that now. So you thought he was bad now. You thought he was getting all the good players now. Yikes. Yikes. If you're a Kentucky fan, be happy. Be happy. The Kentucky fans was wilding. The cat got shot. Cat drove a car into a patio of a restaurant. Like it just jumped out in front of him. You know, they burning cars. And, man, I wish we had the Deliverance music on the board.
You know, to
rock with a Bill, rock with a PhD.
You know, to follow up on the Coach Cal conversation, you know, we had Coach Brett Bielema, the head football coach at Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Badgers, on a few weeks ago. And I thought it was interesting when he talked about Monty Ball, you know, the Heisman Trophy finalist, deciding to come back for his senior year. And Coach Bielema talked about, hey, I brought his parents in, you know, we did the analysis that the NCAA allows us to, and we did a projection, and it looked like he was going to come in, you know, as a second, third rounder. He wanted to be a first or high second rounder. And when families can trust that coaches are going to put their own well-being aside, because make no mistake, it's best for Coach Bielema if he gets another year of Monty Ball.
That's
right.
But
it was very clear, it's very clear that Coach Bielema did the right thing by the ball, by Ball and his family, bringing the parents in and getting an accurate picture of where he was going to be in this year's draft. And Coach Kell obviously is doing that kind of analysis within the rules with these parents and these young men. And when you have that trust where Coach Kell, like you said, Marcus, he can pull out those examples of Tyreek Evans and Derrick Rose. Hey, talk to their parents. They'll let you know. When after the NCAA was over, tournament was over, I sat down with them, and we figured out if it was right for Derek to go or not, if it was right for Tyreek to go or not. And they'll tell you that I was very supportive and gave them honest feedback. And in those situations, it was clear that they needed to go to the next level. So, you know, when you build that kind of trust throughout the recruiting process, and again, these parents, these AAU coaches, they all talk to each other. You know, especially these elite parents of these elite kids. So, you know, I think that goes a very, very far way that a lot of coaches can't do the same thing because, A, they don't have the track record, and, B, that's a tough call. You know, you're in a high-pressure, win-now environment, a college basketball. That's got to be tough. That's got to be tough to make that right call, what's right for the kids.
The one thing I do want to add into this is that there are very few teams of young players like this that win. So, it's a high risk, high reward. So he's not gonna win every year, because it depends. You got to have the right chemistry and leaders to pull it all together. And I think that's always going to be an issue for him. But I think he's got to a mode right now where it's kind of like, if I can have a team win a championship, you know, if I can win one every 2-3 years or within a 4-year cycle, you know, then it kind of keeps this thing going. And I think that's something that he has to know, because anytime you have 18-year-olds, I always remember what they're saying about Dean Smith. You know, when he looked out there and realized that his future was determined by 18 to 21-year-olds, he got scared. It's like these young folks are determining what I'm going to do next. And y'all know, y'all been around college students. They are the most, and 18-year-olds are can be head cases. So
they're really big 5-year-olds.
Yes. And so it's high risk, high reward. You know, every once in a while he's going to pull a group like this, but it's hard to just do it with a mix. What made the Fab Five work was having people like Tally, Riley, some of those other vets around, those glues that you can stick in places here and there. You know, they battled at the beginning, but, you know, they became more of a cohesive team over the course of the year. But those veterans played a key role in settling things down.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he's going to be a regular. I think he's going to be a regular in the Elite Eight, Final Four for the next 5 or 6 years until the rule changes. I think if the rule changes to 2 years, he's going to have a problem because it's going to be hard. Now he's got to figure out how to get kids to come in and play spots. He's got to work at filling holes, which, you know, may not be as bad, but he won't have. I think it's an easier recruiting job now when you got a whole roster, when you got the, like you were saying before, PhD, just getting, just being able to go in and say, hey, you're going to have a ton of playing time. There's nobody in front of you. The guy that is in front of you, you're probably better than. And the guy who is better than you is leaving at your position. You know, being able to go into a kid's living room and sell that too is important. And you made a good point too, D. Will, saying that, you know, I sat down and talked with Derek's family. I sat down and talked with Tyreek's family. And he might even go as far as, I'll give you their number.
Right.
Give them a call and they'll vouch for it.
Yeah.
That's right.
You know what I mean? You want to talk to the MVP. You want to talk to the last 3 rookie of the years in the NBA. I'll give you their phone numbers. Yeah, you want their email addresses. You know what I'm saying?
What
How
about
that when you go into a living room? You know what I'm saying? That's something to sell. That's something to sell. And then the other piece is that the other point I wanted to make real quick when talking about that idea of the makeup of this team in particular, his best player, which is something I think people are overlooking, the best player on this team isn't a guy who's been a stud since he was 14. This dude was unrecruited, unheard of, until the summer after his junior season. So this kid has basically had one summer and a season of being that guy. So he has a different mentality and approach to the game than, say, you know, other kids who have come in as the number one player in their class, where they have been talked about, where they've been written about, where they have been, you know, treated a certain way since they were 12, 13, 14, 15 years old. Anthony Davis was none of that after his junior season. Again, after his junior season ended, he was a 6'7", decent guy. He was decent. You know, he was still growing. He was still hitting that growth. He wasn't finished growing. But it was the summer after his junior season when he hit the AAU circuit that he blew up. So, again, he had a very different mentality than the traditional lead dog. He's okay with fitting in. He's okay with taking a different role. He's okay with just doing what it takes to win, because he's always been a role player. So that's something to think about. And I think that's something to think about when you're talking about this kid as a number one draft pick And what you think of when you think of a number one draft pick is you think of that guy who's going to be your franchise guy, who's going to be a go-to. I think it's yet to be seen whether or not that's in his makeup because, again, he hasn't been groomed to be that at all.
Yeah.
He hasn't been pushed to be that at all. You know, he's kind of found himself in a situation where he's been blessed with a crazy growth spurt. You know, he goes from being a guard to being a 6'10 post player who can move and has amazing athletic ability. The upside is tremendous because he's still figuring out how to beat him on the court, you know, and how to impact the game. But at the same time, there's a certain mentality that you have to take over a game. And we've all seen it, you can't just become that. You know, you either got it or you don't sometimes. And we'll see if he has it as he continues to develop. Because I think that's something that people overlook is that this isn't your typical number one player in the class, in the high school class, who then goes on to be the first pick in the draft. This isn't that guy who's been, you know, like a Sebastian Telfer who was talked about in ninth grade, a LeBron who was talked about in ninth grade, a Kobe who was talked about in ninth grade. This isn't one of those guys. Nobody, and I mean, when I say he was off the radar, this kid was off the grid. Like, nobody was recruiting this kid. The school he went to, his senior year, his high school team won 6 games. Now, he did average 32 points, 22 rebounds, and 7 blocks. But he played in the Chicago Public League that nobody watches. All right, there are a couple of Chicago public school leagues, and he didn't play in the one with the powerhouses. All right, he didn't play in the one with the big time high school programs. He went to a small charter school, and again, just happened to have this crazy growth spurt. Just happened to become the top player in the country. From what I hear, he's got a great work ethic, and I think that'll help him out. But again, once you get to that elite level, and you're talking about franchise players, everybody's got a work ethic. Everybody's got a great work ethic. What separates LeBron from Kobe, from Kevin Love, from Russell Westbrook, from Derrick Rose is all upstairs. It's all upstairs and how they approach the mental side of the game, and that's where it all starts to shake out. So, you know, as we're talking about this kid as a number one pick, that's always something I think people are not, you know, the national media ain't on that yet. They're not playing that angle yet, but that's the angle that you got to look at when you're talking about him as a potential, when you're thinking about expectations for him. So, That's that. Let's look at that. Anybody else got anything to say about Kentucky? There's a lot of layers to this team, man. We just talked about these cats for an hour.
You'll put that one to bed. I didn't want to come and bless the mic after that the way you broke that down. So I will let you put that to bed.
So moving on. All right, we're gonna keep it going with our top 20 hip hop songs of all time. We're all hip hop heads here. When you're looking at the illustrious three man booth, you know, we liken it to the booth on Rap City. That's where that comes from. When we call ourselves the three man booth, you know, also comes with, it's a broadcasting term, but it's also a rap term. All right, when you get in the booth, you got to bring it. And right now, you got the three man booth. And every night when we get on, every Tuesday night when we get on, you're in the booth, and not in the booth like with Madden and Michaels and Madden and Summerall. You're in the booth like with like Raekwon and Ghostface and Meth. That's what we're talking about. And Big Tig is in the background bobbing his head real hard. You know how Tigger do. You know, Big Tig is you know, or Joe Cleese is in the background. Big Les is out making sandwiches. That's the kind of booth we're talking about. All right, all our old school Rap City heads, y'all know what we're talking about right there. Anyway, we got the top 20 hip hop songs of all time. We've run it down. We've run our list down, each of us. I'm going to give you my 10 through 6 real quick. I'll recap my previous songs just briefly, and then I'll get into my 10 through 6, and we'll keep it rolling. So, number 20, I had Jay-Z and Kanye West with Negroes in Paris. Number 19, Nasir Jones with One Mic. Number 18, Mobb Deep with Shook Ones. 17, Outkast, Elevators. Number 16, Eminem with Stan. Number 15, Jay-Z with Dead Presidents. Number 14, Boogie Down Productions, My Philosophy. Number 13, Eric B. and Rakim, Ain't No Joke. Number 12, Tribe Called Quest, Scenario, Number 11, Tupac Shakur, and Dear Mama. Number 10 on Game Changers list of top 20 hip hop songs of all time, Kanye West, Jesus Walks. Again, he said it on a song. Make a song about God, my record won't get played. But it did. Over and over and over and over. And I guarantee each of you had a moment during that year 2004, 2005 when the song was released. You'd be in a club and Jesus Walks would come on and you would just feel a little awkward. It's 2:30 in the morning and the DJ did it. The DJ would do it on purpose. Right before bar time, right before last call, I'm going to play Jesus Walks. Right before everybody leaves.
Oh, man.
So number 10, and again, all jokes aside, a song about your dedication to your religion, putting it in the context, putting it in a modern context, talking about the conflicts between wanting to uphold the values of your faith, but also wanting to pursue the ills of society and the negative things of society that contradict what you believe in, and then also putting that all in the context of being a musician and being someone who is trying to portray an image, and what kind of image are you trying to portray, and how does that jive with what you believe in and your faith. To me, it's just a really strong song, really impactful. Talks about something that usually would get your song turned off, but this was one where he flipped it, and he had a deep content, some real subject matter, and it bumped, and it jammed, and people really took to it, and people listened to it, and people were able to take in the message, but also enjoy the song, which some songs with messages are heavy on the message and light on the artistic part of it, like making a song that I want to listen to. You know, I love your message. I don't really want to listen to it again. This was the antithesis of that. But you had a song where the message was on point. It was grounded. It wasn't too pious. It wasn't too over the top. It was just enough of a message. But then it also grounded it in some real life stuff and kind of talked about the balance you got to strike. Then it also banged. So number 10, Jesus Walks. Number 9, Cash Rules Everything Around Me. Cream, Get the Money. Dollar Bills, y'all. Wu-Tang Clan, released 1994. Cream, great song, probably the Wu-Tang song. Like when you talk about that song of an artist, Cream is that song for Wu-Tang. This is the song that kind of, boom, here we are. Here we are. We're here. We're mainstream. We're holding it down. But we're still underground with it. The griminess of it, the beat, everything fit together so nicely with Cream. Number 8, They Reminisce Over You, Troy, Trouble T. Roy,
wow.
P. Rock and
wow.
CL Smooth.
Wow.
The horn riff itself, the horn riff itself will put you into a euphoric trip down your own memory lane. Like, you hear those horns, I don't care in what context you hear them, they're going to take you someplace else for about 5 minutes, and you're going to wake up, and you're going to be back where you were. But it's like a DeLorean, all right? It's like the DeLorean in Back to the Future. Those horns take you back. They take you someplace else. They take you to the first time you heard that song. And when you have a song that has that element where when you hear it, it takes you someplace else. It takes you back to the first time you heard it. That's a classic song. So, Trouble T. Roy. Then, number 7, I Used to Love Her by Common Sense, 1994. Again, your first listen, and this was before internet. This was really before, you know, you had all of the media coverage wasn't what it was. So you get a song, you hear a song on your local mixtape DJ show, you hear a song late at night, you're listening to it as a kid, and the first time I heard this, I really thought he was talking about a girl.
That's what I thought.
You know, 14, I'm like, okay, man, he wrote a song about a girl. Then I heard it a second time, and I really started listening to it. Like, wait a minute. Okay, this is fresh. He flipped it, you know. When you talk about lyrics, this is a great lyrical song. This is taking it. This is one of the best personifications of hip-hop as an art form, and turning it into a person and talking about the many stages and changes and the evolution of it. It's well done. It's lyrically on point. It all fits together. It's just excellent. Excellent song. So I used to love her. Comment. Number six, Nothing But a G Thing, Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg.
Yes, sir.
That's
1993.
Right.
All
That's
Hail
right.
the West Coast. This song dropped and it changed hip hop. It N.W.A. had held it down for the West Coast in the early 90s, late 80s. They held it down. They put the West Coast on the map. They straight up laid it out that, hey, cats can rap outside of New York. That was a statement N.W.A. made. Nothing But a G Thing made a statement saying that, look, you New York cats, you think you're running it, you're coming for your necks. Because the song, man, the sample, it just crazy. Just the vibe of it introduced us to Snoop. And, you know, Snoop has never been an amazing lyricist, but Snoop is a great rapper.
That's right.
You know, and you got to separate. It's like Cal. It's like Coach Cal. Coach Cal is not an X's and O's guy, but he's still a great coach. It's two different things. You know what I mean? You can be a great tactician. You can be a great coach. Eminem is a great lyricist. Eminem technically is an excellent rapper. Snoop is not that, but Snoop can rap. He has a voice. He has a cadence. He has delivery that's timeless. And this is where we first got introduced to him. And even Dre was doing his thing. I think DLC ghostwrote this for him. You know, Dre gets amazing ghostwriters. Dre's worked with awesome. You know, Dre's not a great. He's not a great writer, but he gets great writers to work with him, and then he can spit it. He can make it work. So that's my 11 through 6. Again, a recap. I'm sorry, 10 through 6. Recap: Jesus Walks, Kanye West, Cash Was Everything Around Me, Wu-Tang Clan, They Reminisce Over You, P-Rock, CL Smooth, Number 7, I Used to Love Her, Common Sense, and Number 6, Nothing But a G-Thing, Dre and Snoop. Boom.
I would say that the only one I would have a problem with that is, you know, P-Rock, CL Smooth. They're kind of like David Robinson. Great player, might not put him in the top 10, could see him anywhere from 12 to 20, and wouldn't argue it. So I'm not saying that that's not a great song, but I don't know if that's a top 10 song as much as I love it. So I'm not, you know, like I said, I love David Robinson. I just might not put him in the top 10. Your others, I could, and the thing about it, I can see the generational shift between us when we talk about these lists. It's like there's a slight overlap, but our generational, what influenced us is going to be clear with our top 10. That's one thing I can definitely see.
Okay. And, you know, I can like I said, I can accept that criticism of number 8. Like I said, when them horns hit, I'm gone. I'm somewhere else.
Can I
hear the horns one more time? Thank you.
No, it's Game Changer. I'm gonna say this to you, Game Changer. No one can do a top 20 like you. I couldn't even
That's
follow
right.
you. You. The way that you talk about it, I'm just gonna say the names. I'm not even gonna say them. I'm not gonna go with Jeff like you do. It's like you make me. I'm like going through my. I'm going through the iTunes trying to play the music when you get done
right.
with it.
Hey, glad to be in service, man. I do it for the community.
I tell you what. So, Marcus, when you mentioned, you know, the P-Rock and CL Smooth, man, I'm thinking Cross Colors. I'm thinking the neon colors like on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. You
right.
know, it took me back. You know, I'm thinking back when
I
was 14, 15. You know, I mean, you listen to the radio all night just to hear that song.
Yep.
Okay? That was the song you called in to request.
I love it. Now, when you start off your list at number 10 with Jesus Walks by Kanye, I got on the undeck circle and started stretching out because I had, you know, I had something for you. I got something for you with that. You know, because I'll be honest, I'm still a little bit salty. I'm still a little bit salty about the loonies at number 12 on my list. I got five of them.
You should have known better than that.
You know, so part of my criticism, and again, I'll give you a little bit more praise, like Devon. You know, I'm sitting here texting with our fantasy football expert, Eric Hamilton, and we're both complimenting how well you are breaking it down. I text to Eric, I kind of want to give him my list and let him break down my list, okay? but with that being said, Game Changer, with that being said, and you can hear it in my voice, I'm a little fired up, okay?
Okay, I'm racing.
Jesus Walks at number 10. I have a big-time problem with that. With Kanye West being in the top 10, you know, it just doesn't sit right with me. You know, it's like that macaroni salad, that potato salad that stayed out all night, okay? It stayed out all night. It's just not sitting right with you. Kanye West in the top 10. I have a problem with that. And, you know, I like what you said. It was a nice mix of, you know, a contemporary gospel with hip-hop, with rap, all that. But come on, man. I'm thinking of the Kanye stuff that he did during that video. It just has no place in the top 10.
I can see you hot about it, man. And what I would say is, it's my list.
I love it.
That's a good response.
Well said.
No. Real talk. I can hear your point, man. But like I said, man, I feel like the that song came out during a time where you were getting Ja Rule, G Unit, where you were getting like gangsted out all the time. Like you were getting shot on the radio. Every cat on the radio was shooting you. Like I get out of my car just bleeding. I mean, I ain't gonna listen to the radio today, man. I don't feel like getting shot. You know what I'm saying? Like, how many cats is going to kill me today? That's what listening to the radio between 2000 and 2003 was like, man. It was like you're getting shot all the time, and everybody's shooting you. Everybody's right. Fucking at you. You know what I mean? And Kanye flipped it. He took it a different direction. And for me, again, this list is as much as about the song itself, but it's about the impact of the song. And I want my list to kind of give you an idea of the many different eras of hip-hop and how hip-hop is grown and shifted and switched and become this and become that and gone from this and became that. And so I think that song is a tremendous song in shifting the paradigm in hip-hop. And at that time, and a lot of, I mean, for Kanye, as influential as he's been, that's his song. That's his song that put him in a place where he could now cross over and become what he is now, which is, you know, one of the top five biggest artists in the world. So that's why I put it in the top 10, because I think as far as impact and as far as its game-changing ability, yes, I said it, its game-changing ability, it's definitely a game-changer. So, hey, but again, it's my list. And I'll give you a Kanye shrug with that. If you see me, I'm Kanye shrugging right now. And if you ever get a chance, man, Google the George Bush doesn't like black people clip. Just if you want to laugh for about 30 minutes straight, man, Google it. You look it up on YouTube, watch it, and the first thing you're gonna laugh at is how nervous Kanye is. Kanye is like when you was about to tell your mom, when you was about to, that first time you kind of tried to stand up to your mom or dad, and you try to like express yourself to your parent, and you try to like make a point. You know what I'm saying? We've all had that moment when we was like 16 or 17, like, you know what, man, I'm just gonna say what I want to say, and your voice gets to cracking, you get all nervous, you get all agitated,
You're trying to make your statement, and that's what Kanye feels like. Like he's going to step to mom or dad. And then the second thing you're going to laugh at is the reaction of Mike Myers. Mike Myers is totally like, dude, that is not on the teleprompter. That is not what you're supposed to be saying right now, and I really don't know what to do. And then you got Chris Tucker, who they throw it to after Kanye says George Bush doesn't like black people. And Chris Tucker's like, what the? What just happened? So let me tell you, if you just want to laugh, just check that out. This is just a total tangent. But if you want a quick laugh, then Google that real quick. I guarantee you'll laugh for about a half hour. Those three things alone will crack you up. But anyway, I digress. So keeping it rolling. All right, so that was my list. So now, I'm going to save Five on the Black Hand Side for after hours. I want us to really get into that and really talk that up. So what we're going to do right now is we're going to go off the dome for a little bit, talk about some things, and then we're going to start the transition. We're going to hit PhDs, top 20 hip-hop songs, do the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week, and then let D-Wills close it out with his top 20 songs before we get previewing next week and we go into the shutdown. All right, we're going to keep it real tight. Let's keep it moving. We try to hit three of these topics and off the dome. The first one we want to go with is Tiger Woods. Get my Joe Peoples on. We got Tiger Woods. We got Tiger Woods here. Tiger got his first victory in a long time. It's been a long time for old Eldridge. So he got his first victory. And now all of a sudden this cat is favored to win the Masters. What? I mean, but then what? PhD, explain. Why is Tiger Woods' favorite now?
Well, I tell you what. It's interesting when you are watching SportsCenter and they're bringing on analysts, you know, and they ask them, so who would you like? Like, who are you predicting to win the Masters? And the guy says, so you pretty much ask me, am I going to take Tiger or the field? Think about that for a second. Tiger or the field? The field of 100-plus golfers or Tiger? So for me, that just underlines how big of a giant he is within golfing. Having a couple of down years, which, let's keep this in perspective, his down year was better than 90% of the golfers on tour. His down years were better than 90% of the golfers on tour. So I think it fits right in, and I think this is going to be the Tiger's advantage because the environment is starting to get more familiar with him. Having people question, doubt him, that was new for Tiger. That was all new for Tiger. Now he's getting back into familiar space where he is the favorite. People are picking him among everybody else. So I think it's warranted, and I think he's going to do very well. Now, if you ask me if I'm taking Tiger or the field, I'm taking Tiger.
Well,
yeah.
Question answered. D-Wills, what you think?
We talked a lot about, you know, kind of how he spiraled out and what the cause. I think that what's great about Tiger and why, you know, even what we'll see with these next generation of golfers is because of their commitment to maintaining the physical condition. So even though his body has been breaking down, you know, he's been tweaking his swing, putting things together, improving his putting, doing the little things, and it's coming together. I mean, one of the things he talks about is that his process for putting things together, he'll take a couple steps back and take three or four steps forward to, like, really try to work on his game. And I think it's beginning to click now. And part of it is I think he's gotten through the emotional turmoil. I think a lot of the struggle that people put on him the last few years, you know, it wasn't about his physical play. It was everything above his neck. And it was reason why. You know, when you're looking at losing, I don't know how many million he lost as part of the process, you know, I think that recovery, and I think over the last 6 or 7 months, what you've seen is a person who's gotten comfortable with his new reality, his family situation, his routine, and now he's back into that stride in his new reality. He just accepted that this is the new reality and, you know, probably turned the corner about trying to fight to restore his relationship, just realized he had to move forward. So I think just getting over that was going to allow him to get back to where he is. Is he going to, you know, win, you know, four majors within a 12 to 18 month period? That might not happen, but he might win two, plus a whole bunch of other championships, which is more than, which is a great year by anyone else's standards.
You know, but yeah, but the dude only won once, man. He's been struggling. He has been struggling so much. Really? I'm sorry, man. I guess the rest of the field in golf is just that underdeveloped, but it seems like a guy shouldn't be able to, like, but, and maybe, I think you're right, PhD. I just got to put it in perspective, and I just got to wrap my mind around this real quick, man, is that this guy has performed at such a high level for so long that what he's done is still better than what most cats do in their best years. And I guess so. I guess he's just that good. He's just that good. All I can say is, all right. I get it. I'm gonna put 50 on him. All right, I'm gonna put 50 on him with the Vegas odds.
He got
right?
you tongue-tied, and then he's got you tongue-tied, game changer. And that just does not happen often.
Nah, I don't, man. So I'm just gonna move on. Tiger wins, all right? Tiger favorite, it's okay with me. I still don't know why yet, but you guys convinced me. I'm okay with Tiger being favorite. RG3 versus Andrew Luck. Now, the debate has heated up, and the debate has gotten really interesting over the last couple of days. As Luck had a workout with the Colts, RG3 said, nah, I'm good. Been there, done that. Y'all got tape. It's 2012. Check it out. DVDs, new things called DVDs. Catch me on one of those. history says one of these guys ain't going to work out. And the reason I say that is because Ryan Leaf just got arrested this week.
Again. So it could either go well or it could go
Ryan Leaf. I'm not even going to say it could go bad. I'm just going to say it could go Ryan Leaf. All right, so what are we looking at right now? Because, again, history says that one of these cats ain't going to work out the way we – it ain't going to go the way we think it's going to go. As Bernie Mac would say, this ain't going to go the way you think it's going to go. So who is D. Wills? Who is that? Who is this not going to work out for?
Well,
or can
I
it work for both?
I think it's going to work for both. Because I think even that stat – I mean, a lot of people talk about the stat over the course of the draft and about 50%. But if you look at the past probably 10 to 12 years, that stat is much higher. And a lot of it is because of the rule changes that young quarterbacks can catch their groove just because of what defensive backs and other folks can't do. But I also think that both of these players have a high IQ. They both have a drive to win. You know, it's kind of like, you know, we get into this draft mode and people just lose their mind. And forget, you know, sometimes your first analysis, your first evaluation is probably the right one. Luck is still going to be great, and I think RG3 is going to be great. And if the Colts pick Luck and then RG3 gets picked second, that's just two great players getting picked first and second. I think they're both going to be successful just because I think they both have the right approach, and they're both very bright, and they're both are going to do what's necessary to succeed. So I don't think this is a, you know, similar to even when Peyton was drafted. I don't think it's a Ryan Leaf, Peyton Manning scenario. I think Ryan Leaf had things in his past, had things that were red flags that a lot of folks knew already, where you don't have any of those red flags with any of these players.
Well said. PhD, who you taking? I mean, well, what do you think? Who's not going to work out?
Fellas, mark this down, 10:04 Central, April 3rd, 2012. I am punting. About 12, 13 years ago, I lost a bet that I can no longer ever talk about quarterback prospects after I swore that Akili Smith was going to be an all-pro quarterback at some point.
I'm sorry to laugh. I should have done that. My bad.
I could have told you that was going to be wrong. I could have saved you all kinds of money.
So like I said,
do sound like Geico.
I saved you all kinds of money.
Oh,
you're tell me?
It's a pressure.
You all the insurance helmet on us,
man. All the things you just went through, I could have saved you that.
Yeah, so man code requires that I punt.
But at least you're honest, man. At least you're
yeah.
You know, we always uphold the code on the show, man. So we're gonna let that one be. We're not gonna touch that one no more. Now,
thank you.
I want to touch on before we move off the dome. We go into the dogs of the week. I want to touch on the one Ricky Williams is getting a statue at the University of Texas Austin. The question I have to pose to the three-man booth, the illustrious three-man booth, is what will the statue be doing? So I've asked the three-man booth to come up with their statue of Ricky Williams. And what is their statue of Ricky Williams going to be doing? So I'm going to throw this one to PhD first. What pose is your statue going to be in?
I'm going to keep it very vanilla. I think that you have Ricky in his away Longhorn jersey on, running the football with a few defenders hanging off of him. Keep it very vanilla.
Okay. Okay. And just so you know, I'm not. I'm not keeping it vanilla at all. Mine is going to be like sherbet.
That's right.
And Neapolitan. D. Wills, what you got Ricky doing in your statue, man?
He is going down the aisle with Dicka at the end, waiting to receive him with the dress on. That is
wow.
The most famous image you could have.
I think I'm going to do you one better. We'll see. I like that one, though. And it's just, again, no disrespect to Ricky Williams, man. The Gat had a great career, but there's a lot of layers to this brother, man. We got to touch on them all. Pause. We're going to keep it rolling. So we got Ricky Williams coming down the aisle in a wedding dress. Yikes. We got Rick in his away Texas Longhorns jersey, running the ball, looking like Earl Campbell. And then we have my statue, which will be Ricky Williams at a podium with his helmet on and Masterpiece sitting next to him. That's my Ricky Williams statue. Next question. That's my Ricky Williams statue. So let's keep it moving. So that's off the dome for this week. We'll touch base on some of the other topics that we have if we have time and after hours. So please download the show and you'll get more off the dome topics plus the five on the black hand side. But right now we're gonna go into THD's top 20 hip hop songs numbers 10 through 6. Lay it on us.
All right, so I'm going to recap. At 20, I had Lil Wayne, a medley. You know what? I'm not even going to recap mine. I just want to get away from the
criticism. Oh, I was just about to say, save yourself.
Yeah. Try to maintain some credibility out there to some first-time listeners, okay? So number 10, I'm coming through with Juicy by the Notorious B.I.G. Love this song, the beat, you know, this was one of Biggie's first big hits. And the beat just took you back. I believe it was from a 70s hit song, something that just took you back to the solid gold days, okay? I'm staying with Biggie for number 9, and I'm going with Warning. Who is this paging me at 5:46 in the morning?
Yeah.
Cracking dunk. Now, Game Changer, you talked about lyrical skills. This was on his first album, Ready to Die. And this was one where, you know, this is back when we had cassettes, where you had the A side and the B side. And this was one that was kind of stuck, kind of hidden in the B side. And you really knew your hip-hop heads and your Biggie fans when they could quote lyrics from this song. When you look at Life After Death, there was a song where he talks about he creeping with his chick and her man is out playing against the Utah Jazz. You know, which one? One of them 6'5" cats, okay? Those two songs, those two songs to me just show that, that gritty lyrical skill that Biggie had. Not the commercial hitters that Puffy was in the background doing his thing with Shining, Elastic, and bubble suits. Not that, but the gritty stuff that, that made Big, Big. Now I'm going to move to Melly Mel, The Message. Don't know a whole lot about the song. It was one or two on a lot of lists out there. I played it on YouTube and it was hot. I might have to have D-Will step in and break that one down for me.
Well, go ahead.
Go right ahead, D-Wills.
No, you know it's in my top 10. That's all I'm going to say.
It's in my top 5.
Right. Tribe Called Quest. Now, I could talk for a while on this one, but I'm going to keep it brief. Scenario. Woo! Busta Rhymes verse on Scenario. I mean, that is like some 5-hour energy right there. It just gets you hyped. Can you hear my voice? I'm sitting here with the mic in front of me. Just got my hands going all over like the Incredible Hulk. Busta Rhymes' verse in this song just gets you fired up. It's kind of like the Game Changers rant on Dwight Howard. Another plug, realsportsguys.com. Check it out. Number 6, for all the ladies out there listening, especially my wife, LL Cool J, I Need Love. Boy, this is so high on my list because it was one of those first ballads that broke down the hip-hop with just the love story telling. And LL Cool J, you know, when I'm alone in my room, sometimes I stare at the wall. Yeah, I mean, it just hit it. So that's my list. Didn't break it down like the Game Changer, but hopefully you can hear that passion that came through in my voice.
Oh, yeah, man, the passion is there, man. And I can't gripe with none of your choices, man. I like I Need Love. I like that. That's a different twist on it. I like you, Sneaky. You're a sneaky cat, you Dino. You're a sneaky dude. I like that, though. I like that. That was real. That was good. I like that. Props. I'm hands off with that one. Cocaine is in the corner. So listen out there. Cocaine is my white pit bull. All right. And anytime things get a little out of hand, you know, I gotta bring out cocaine. So, D. Wills, what you got? You got any critiques of his list?
No, I actually, you know, we beat him up enough, but I actually like this part of his list. He kind of came back to reality, and I do like his list. I like the mix of it. Some of those songs I had in my top 20, but I think what we'll see in the top 10 is that overlap, that generational overlap, and where we might emphasize. That's what I love about what we're doing is some of the things that. And this top 10 is really going to show the diversity in our generational look at hip hop in terms of what we emphasize. I liked it. I can't complain.
Let's keep it moving, Game Changer. Let's keep it moving. Okay. I don't want to give you guys too much time. Dig in.
Absolutely. So Here we're going to go into the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week as we wrap up the last 15 minutes of the show. So for all you live listeners, again, we're going to get it. We're going to get everything in. But if you want to hear, we're going to get D-Wheels 10 through 6 in the after-hours section. We're going to hit 5 on the black-hand side in the after-hours section. So make sure you download to check out those things. Here we go. Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. All right, Resistance Digital, Dog of the Week. D-Wills. Where you at, my man?
Man, I was going to do it, but until tonight, it's Brittany Griner. They went 40-0. It was my last-minute switch-up. She's been phenomenal. I want to just pay homage to her and the team in Baylor. It's Brittany Griner.
Yeah, she's balling, man. Like I said, I like her as a female Luau Fender, man. She's a baller. She's a baller, no doubt. I did say Luau Fender. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for all you young folks. All right? PhD.
We need more dogs.
I'm going with Brittany Griner as well for the same reasons that D-Wells just mentioned. She is, quite honestly, one of the best basketball players I've seen in terms of dominating a game. So I'm going to go with Brittany Griner.
Excellent. Excellent. My dogs of the week, the entire Miami Heat team. Why? Not for anything that they did on the court, but for them having the social awareness to pay homage or to raise awareness around the Trayvon Martin incident. For those of you that are not aware, you live under a rock. Trayvon Martin is a young African-American male who was wrongly murdered at the hands of a member of a neighborhood watch who mistook the young brother for a criminal of some kind. The Miami Heat, he mistook him for a criminal because the young man was wearing a hoodie. African-American male, hoodie, wrong neighborhood in a gated community late at night, and, you know, they put 2 and 2 together and got 12. And what resulted was a young man lost his life because of the prejudice of another person. The Miami Heat took a stand. They all did a picture with hoods on, which has kind of been, you know, the issue has kind of, the incident has kind of taken a life of its own. And now you have people kind of trying to raise awareness around the issue. By wearing hoods. And so the Miami Heat took a picture rocking hoods. So props to them. You know, I get on athletes today about not being socially aware enough. And if I'm going to take shots at them, I got to give props when they are. So much props to the Heat for taking a stand on this issue. Those are my dogs of the week.
Good one.
Right now I'm going to pass it to PhD. I want you to preview our guest schedule for the next couple of weeks as we begin to go into the shutdown.
Absolutely. So first of all, I want to thank the guests that we had on last week. We had Tamika Randall, the head coach at Ohio U, as well as Pryor Orser, the head coach at Colorado School of Mines. We also had Lewis Preston, the head coach of the Kennesaw State Owls, three coaches that really helped us out. They pretty much predicted what was going to happen in the Final Four for both the men and the women's Final Four, so they were spot on. upcoming, next week we have Cecil Youngblood, former All-American in both basketball and football, played some time in the NFL. He's a coach 10 years in NCAA and is currently an assistant dean at Beloit College. He also is an author of one of the books that's highlighted on my website at realsportsguys.com, Training Day. Looking forward to having him come on next week. After Coach Youngblood comes on the 17th, we have Lance Leipold, the head coach at UW-Whitewater, a Division III program in football. check out the profile that we have for him on realsportsguys.com. He's doing some video game type things at UW-Whitewater. He's been down there for 5 years, and his overall record is 72 wins and only 3 losses. In his 5 years as head coach at Whitewater, he has won 4 national championships plus a national runner-up. So we're looking forward to having him on. A few weeks after that, Alan Sack, the author at Counter for the Amateurs, who was on our show earlier in the year, will be back. We always enjoy having Alan Sack on. He's going to talk about his work for the Drake Group, as well as other things that are pertinent to student-athletes. And then in the coming weeks, we're going to beef up our basketball talk. Justin Page will be on to talk a little bit about what's going on in the NBA as the playoffs approach. And then Eric Hamilton, our fantasy football guy. You know, we've given Eric a few months off to get ready, but now with the draft coming around, we're going to start to bring Eric in and get some of his keen analysis. And remember, listen to our new baseball show called Inside the Park. That's led by R.J. Page, Hank Davis, and Mike Bailey. They come on every Wednesday. There's more information on our website about them. They have Jonah Carey coming on next Wednesday. Jonah is the author of The Extra 2%, a book that he wrote about the Tampa Bay Devil Rays and how they use Wall Street principles to win, essentially. Somewhat like Moneyball, but a very different philosophy. So those are some of the folks we have coming up in the next 2 weeks, Game Changer.
Fresh. That's fresh right there. So, yeah, we got a loaded on-deck circle for folks coming up to bat with us over the next couple of weeks. So make sure you check us out every Tuesday night, 8:30 to 10:30 Central Time. Check us out. Real Sports Guys, RSG, Renegade Radio. Like I said, PAG just ran it down. We got a lot coming. We got a lot coming for you all. Now, we're going to go into the shutdown. We're going to start the shutdown of the show. Now, the shutdown is a new segment. All right? The shutdown is how we're going to end our shows. Instead of parting shots and things like that, we're going to shut something down every week. All right? And what we're going to do in the shutdown section is we're going to just shut down something that we think is whack, something we think is lame that's going on, whether it's on other sports radio shows, whether it's something that we heard in the media, kind of a vibe going around. We're just going to shut it down, all right? We're going to shut it down, and we're going to dead it and let it rest in peace, all right? Now, for those of you who are here, I want you to hang on for after hours, all right? I want you to hang on for after hours, because during the after hours, what we're going to do is we're going to get into the five on the black-hand side. We're going to touch on a few more topics from off the dome, and then we're going to let D. Wills get into his 10 through 6. So if you want to hear D. Wills 10 through 6, jump in with us on after hours. We don't want to cut it short. We want to give him his time to really elaborate, because D. Wills is a head. He's a hip-hop head. And so we don't want to cut that short. We run it short on time, so we don't want to cut his top 20 short. We want to keep that rolling, and we want to let his marinate a little bit and let it sit with you. So just make sure you download if you want to hear it, all right? And we'll recap it next week on the show so that you make sure you hear it if you don't want to download. But please download, all right? That helps us out. Or else hit us up at www.realsportsguys.com. You can also catch us on Facebook and Twitter. We're all over. You know, we're trying to reach out. We're all over the place. You know, we got our hands and feet and everything, all right? So, as we get into the shutdown, all right, D. Wills, this week, what are you shutting down, my man?
I'm shutting down all this talk about Calipari and the one and done. Quit being hypocritical, all you coaches out there. Bobby Knight, quit complaining. Quit crying. You throwing chairs on the floor, hitting players. throwing officers in the trash cans in Puerto Rico, all this stuff, but then you're going to be critical of Calipari. It kills me. I'm shutting that down.
PhD, my brother. My brother from another mother. What are you shutting down this week, my man?
So I pull the D wheels. I pull the D wheels in fantasy sports. I rolled into 2 weeks heading into the final week of our fantasy basketball season, which both you gentlemen are part of the league. I was in 10th, 11th place, and only the top eight seeds. Top eight teams make it in. Your boy D. Newell, okay, came in and moved up to 10 in the next to last week of the season. And then leapfrogged two people to make that eight seed. I felt like Mutombo when he was back with the Nuggets and he was holding that ball after they beat the Sonics as the eight seed. So now I'm trying to shut down the one seed. And the one seed, for all the listeners out there, everybody has that friend, that person, that if they beat you in anything, they would let you know. Even if it's 10 years from now, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but you lost to me in fantasy basketball back in 2002. Okay. And that person is Tiffany Royster. I do not want to lose to Royster. I do not want to lose to Royster. If I lose to Royster, it's going to be a problem. So I'm shutting down the front seat in the first week of the playoffs, game changer.
Love it. Love it. Well delivered. Well delivered. You got me dying over here, man. If you know this young lady, she's a wonderful young lady, but you do not want to lose to her. Because he ain't lying.
He's from Chi-Town, and you will be Jesus Walks on you.
Oh, yeah. PhD ain't never lied on that one. She will get you. She will get you. She will get you. You will never hit anybody. Much love to the Royce, man. Much love to Royster. Hope she's listening. If you're not listening, girl, you better start listening and download the show. All right? So, for me, what I'm shutting down this week, man, is I'm shutting down, all right? I'm shutting down any talk of LeBron James not being the MVP, all right? This man is having a historic season. He is having a historic season statistically. Now, yes, what happens in the regular season doesn't mean a whole lot. But if we give this award to anybody else, yeah, Durant's having a nice year. Yeah, the Thunder are doing their thing. They're the number two seed, but the Heat are the number three seed overall in the league. Kevin Love, amazing year. We're going to get into that when we go off the dome in the after hours. Kevin Love is killing it. He's taking his game to heights I don't think anybody ever foresaw with him. Who else do you want? Dwight Howard, you could throw him in that category. He's made Orlando into something. They in the mix. Kobe's having a Kobe year. He's doing his thing, but he's doing it at 32, 33 years old. So that's a different flavor on it. He's doing it at an older age. But ultimately, this is LeBron's award. And anybody not trying to give this award to LeBron is hating. Stop hating. You're lessening the value of the award when you try and give it to anybody but LeBron. All right? And that's, to me, that's what it seems like we're trying to do. We're trying to give it to somebody else. We're tired of this guy. Just give it to somebody else. And we can't do that. We can't let that be our MO. All right? So that's what I'm shutting down this week. I'm shutting down the anti-LeBron MVP talk. And that's where we're going to leave it this week. All right? So for all you live listeners, we're wrapping up the show. We got about 30 seconds left. Thank you for listening. Make sure you check us out next week when we have Coach Cecil Youngblood on. He's going to bring it like all of our guests do. We look forward to having him on. It's been a banging show this week. Make sure you check us next week. Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. Check us out. Also hit us up on Facebook and Twitter. Renegading. That's what we do around these parts. All right, we're going to keep it going. All right, take care, be blessed, be good to yourself. Peace.
All right. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports, RSG, Renegade Radio, After Hours. This is the After Hours section of the show where we continue. All right, we're going to give you about another 15 minutes of good renegading, good old-fashioned, provocative sports talk, and then we're going to let you go to bed. All right? So this is for all the downloaders. This is for all the late-night creepers, all the folks that stick with us a little bit longer than they should. All right? Let's get into our five on the black-hand side to kick this off. So let's go ahead and jump into that.
Five on the black-hand side.
I cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it. I want winners.
Hey, that's the man, Mike Singletary, man. He joins us from time to time, man. He's an avid listener to the show. We're going to have to get him on one day, man, because we love his drops. We have to get him a coaching job is what we need to do. We need to start a campaign. We need to start a campaign and have it go viral to get Singletary another head coaching job, because that year when he was coaching, man, he was dropping drop material. You know, he was giving us drop material on a weekly basis. So we got the five on the black hand side. The NCAA tournament has just wrapped up for both the men's and the women's. Congratulations to the University of Kentucky Wildcats on the men's side. Congratulations to the Baylor Lady Bears on the women's side, the two national championships in basketball this year. As we wrap it up, RSG style, we're going to put a pretty bow on it. First question in the five on the black-hand side, brackets. The brackets this year, to me, didn't feel as bad as they did last year. I remember last year, after the first weekend, I ain't even look at my bracket no more. This year, I kind of stayed in it a little bit longer. Fellas, let's get into our brackets. What went wrong? What went right? I'm going to throw this one to D-Wills first, and then PAD, you pick it up when he's done.
What went wrong for me is Vandy and Mizzou. I lost them early. I had Vandy in the Final Four. I drank the Kool-Aid, and I went away from my philosophy in the way I picked some of the other teams, teams that could play when they didn't shoot well. They had enough commitment to defense that they had ways to win when the ball wasn't going in the basket. And that was one of the reasons why I stuck with Kentucky. The other thing, Kendall Marshall, when his injury crushed me, because I think I would have won a couple more tournaments, pools, if Carolina would have made it to the finals. And then the other thing is buying into Duke. I normally don't do that. But for some reason, and I think the Plumlees fooled me, because normally y'all know how I feel about Duke. They're like the college version of the old Seattle Sonics under George Karl.
I don't have facts to back this up.
and so I bought into it, and I went against some of my basic approaches to picking in the draft, and it came back to bite me, which I won't do next year. Even though I finished first in RSG, I won't tell you. What went right? I went 26-6 in that second round, now that they call it
Love
the second round. That was what right for me, because that round basically carried me for the rest of the tournament.
Okay. PAZ, what went wrong? What went right?
Oh, a lot went wrong for him. Come on, where's the list, baby?
I want winners.
Wow, so D. Wills just put me out there.
We couldn't do diddly poo offensively.
Oh, so D. Wills just put me out there.
You play to win the game.
So for the listeners out there that have downloaded, hopefully you listen to our March Madness show, our pre-tourney show. We had seven or eight coaches that were headed to the tournament. You know, I let my heart get in the way. I think I picked every one of those teams to win in the first round, including UNC Asheville, who was a 16 seed up against the Syracuse Orange.
Oh,
So I had one bracket. One bracket was just my heart. In the other bracket, you know, I tried to go Renegade style because there have been years that I've won tourney challenges. I have, believe it or not. But I knew that this year was going to be the year that a 2-seed fell again to a 15-seed. It only happened 4 times since, you know, since they expanded the field to 64 teams in the mid-80s. And I picked Detroit to beat Kansas in the first round, in the first round. And I truly believe this. Detroit has been a team that I have watched all season. And so when that didn't happen, and then Kansas goes all the way to the Final Four. you know, it kind of blew up my bracket. So Game Changer's question was, what went wrong, what went right? I have to stop at what went wrong. Minimal went right.
Man, we reeled him a little bit, but T-Wills, I mean, PhD is usually, he usually gets after in the tournament challenge, and he's usually one of the, I mean, last year he was in it right up to the end. This year, like he said, he kind of got caught up in the moment a little bit. You know, he's got this new opportunity with us, and he's talking to these coaches, man, and they sold him. I told him, man, that's what they do.
And he forgot that's what they do. You gotta have that Hollywood. You gotta have that Hollywood approach. Let's do lunch. Knowing that you're never gonna do lunch. You gotta have that feel to it.
That's what they do, man. These cats come in your living room, man. They said water to a whale.
You know, I did believe in South Dakota State. You know, and I don't think I was alone there. That was a 4-13 matchup against Baylor.
Oh, definitely.
You know, or was it 3-14? I don't remember. But that was the one I really believed in. And I thought Montana would beat Wisconsin. That, I believe, was actually the 4-13 matchup. The Baylor-South Dakota State was a 3-14 matchup. You know, so those two games, I actually really thought, you know, and, mm-hmm. and I don't think I was alone there. But what really got me in trouble was that Detroit. And here's the thing. 2 15 seeds did win. Lehigh was a 15 seed. And who was it? Was it Jackson State? No, it was Norfolk State. They were
Norfolk,
15 seed. And so, you know, I picked the wrong one.
it's like one of those riddles, you know what I'm saying? It's like one of those old riddles where you're on the right track and you know something is going to happen, but now you got to figure out which one. You got to figure out which 15 seed it was. And you just struck out on the 15s, man. You had the right concept. You definitely had the right concept.
Yeah.
But you struck out on the 15.
Like
on which 15?
It's like an old Batman sitcom from the Riddler. And the Riddler leaves
right.
<clue. laughs> Yeah. Well, yeah, I appreciate you guys trying to make me feel better. But, you know, I think I finished, you know, President Obama finished in the 63rd percentile. I'm like in the, I think 98% of people did better than I.
Oh, man. Better luck next year, brother. I know you're gonna perform better than that. You have no choice.
I was watching
you drop down a list so fast. I thought it was another recession. I look. I'm like, where is he going? I had to scroll down to find you. I'm like, where the hell?
Marcus, say, hey, we started me. Email. You start. You had the email types and everything. Phil, I don't think you entered your bracket. I don't even see you on the leaderboard nowhere.
I had to scroll down. I said, we can't scroll down. My goodness. You had the weight of the world on you.
Yeah.
Nah, I'm going to leave you alone.
Now, I'll say, I didn't fare as well as D. Wills, but I fell somewhere in the middle. I didn't fare as well as D. Wills, but I didn't do as poorly as PhD. you know, what got me was the Missouri pick. I had Missouri going to the Final Four. And, you know, again, I don't usually do Duke at all. I don't really rock with them like that, but I had them going to the Elite Eight this year, partly because I had Baylor losing to UNLV in the second round, and that didn't happen at all.
And then I figured UNLV would be a good matchup for Duke. I didn't even scout Lehigh. I didn't even click on Lehigh to see what they was bringing to the table. You know what I'm saying? I just didn't. So that didn't go well. That definitely went wrong. Kendall Marshall getting hurt. Fab Mello getting becoming ineligible hurt because I had Syracuse and North Carolina in my Final Four. And I think, you know, this year I went with consistency. Who had performed at a high level all season. And that's why in my Final Four I had UK, Syracuse, North Carolina, and Missouri. All those teams that played well throughout the season, they all had played tough schedules and been tested and had performed well in those games. And, you know, on one side of my bracket, I don't know what happened to Missouri. They're on probation. They're on game-changer bracket probation. For the next 2 years, they're not getting out the first weekend in my bracket. Same with Duke. That's what happens to me when you're over a three seed, and I pick you going to the Elite Eight, and you don't make it. You don't even get to the Sweet 16 or get out of the first game. You go on 2 years probation. So Missouri, unless they got some studs, they is not getting anywhere out of my bracket next year out of pure spite. I don't care. That's how I roll. And then, you know, UNC hurt me. But what went right was my Kentucky pick. I picked Kentucky going all the way. I finished in the 71st percentile. So I got the Kentucky pick right. Outside of that, really, I didn't a whole lot happen well for me. I had Syracuse and Ohio State in my Elite Eight. That was the only Elite Eight matchup that I got completely right. Everything after that was just average. I had a good first couple of rounds, but as I got closer to my Sweet 16, I was batting about 50%. So that's the way it goes. It happens that way. The next thing I want to talk about in the 5 on the Black Hand side, this will probably be the last thing we hit on tonight, and then we're going to do D-Will's top 20 hip-hop songs, 10 through 6, and then we're going to wrap it up for this after-hour session. The last thing I want to talk about is the coaching moves that happened during the last couple of weeks of the tourney. We had Frank Martin go from Kansas State to South Carolina. We had Jim Gross go from Ohio to Illinois. And then we had Bruce Weber go from Illinois to Kansas State. So a little circle dance going on right there. Which one of those moves do you like? And we also had Danny Manning get the job at Tulsa, which I think is a great gig for Danny. Stepping stone gig. I think he's going to do well out there. What do you guys think of those moves? I'll toss this one to PhD first.
So I like the Martin move to South Carolina. I think I mentioned this last week, where South Carolina is an interesting place, in my opinion. You have a lot of talent there, but they have a hard time keeping that talent in state. And I think that's why Spurrier has been so successful and possibly why Spurrier and Lou Holtz picked that location. Because they knew, hey, if we can recruit this North Carolina area, the South Carolina area, and parts of Virginia, if we can keep these kids in this area, we have a chance. You know, and then kind of dip into some of these other fertile recruiting grounds across the country in the South. So I think Martin can do a phenomenal job out there. Once he got Michael Beasley, I knew this guy could recruit. Michael Beasley was a beast in high school. Weber to Kansas State, I think that could work out well, too. Weber has done well in these types of environments. You know, he started out after he left Purdue, going to Southern Illinois. I think that was one of his first jobs, head gigs there. The Illinois position is really interesting to me. Devon brought up a good point that Illinois has really struggled since Lou Henson left, and they lost a stronghold in that Chicago area in terms of recruiting. You know, the key for Gross of Illinois is he's got to stop the bleeding and what's happening with Purdue, Michigan State, Missouri, coming in and getting that Southern Illinois and that Chicago type of talent. You know, right now Missouri is pulling in kids from St. Louis, East St. Louis, all of Southern Illinois, Missouri's all over it. And Illinois just continues to lose out. You know, some of the top player of the year candidates in the state of Illinois, you look at the last 4 or 5 years, many of them have went to Michigan State or Purdue, including Lewis Jackson, who I saw play at high school out of Peoria. So I think Gross has got his, his work cut out for him. I wouldn't be surprised if he was the fourth or fifth choice for this job. A lot of folks, including Shaka Smart, I think just passed on it because it wasn't the best of situations. So those are my thoughts on those three schools and those three coaching moves.
You made some good points, man. The Illinois job, to me, you know, I think Bill Self showed you what it can be, and I think Weber showed you also what it can be if it doesn't go well. If it goes well, you have what Bill Self had, where you're playing, you know, you have a national runner-up team, the team that they had, and I think it was 05, with Darren Williams and D. Brown and Luther Head, where you can get kids. You can get kids there. You can get kids playing. You can really make some things happen. Frank Martin in South Carolina, I don't know if I like it as much as you do. And the reason I don't like it as much is because North Carolina State is coming. They're on the hunt. Carolina is tough. Duke is tough. You got Wake Forest there, which is a sleeping giant. You know, that's been asleep the last couple of years. That North Carolina, South Carolina area, you still have Clemson, which is still a somewhat a mid-level profile, a high major that still gets some kids. That's a tough area to lock down. Now, Frank can do it because I like Frank as a coach. I think Frank, I like his style. He gets on his kids, but he's also caring. You know, he cares. He knows the game. He knows his X's and O's, but he's got a tough road ahead of him out there in Carolina. But I think it's a step up for him. To me, there seemed to be something not jiving with that whole Kansas State situation for him, which is what I think why he got out of there. And it's not an easy place to recruit. You know, Kansas is Kansas. Huge, you know, big brother, little brother complex with K-State, especially in basketball. So I'm glad to see him get an opportunity somewhere else, but I think it's going to be a tough road for him, a tough go of it. And Weber had to get a gig. He had to get a job. So if K-State will have him, he'll take it. You know, that's my take on it. D. Wills, where you stand on that one?
I think y'all made pretty good points regarding, you know, all the jobs. You know, we've been banging Illinois. I think Illinois has a lot of issues. I mean, part of the issues, they had issues with their recent chancellor. So they got major leadership issues. And so I think any coach coming in, the thing about coaches at Division I levels, it's about the relationship with the chancellor as much as anything. You know, you might have an AD, unless you have a situation like Alvarez at Wisconsin where you have a legend in AD position, you know, these major coaches' relationships are really with the chancellors. And so when you have instability in that leadership role, that makes it difficult to recruit coaches because they don't know where the university is going. And so I think Illinois is just, you know, I just think it, you know, most, you know, people just don't know the value and opportunity there. And, you know, but I think it's a job that can really be a valuable job in the near future. They can figure out how to at least get some inroads. They don't have to get everything in Chicago, but get some inroads, get some ownership in Peoria, East St. Louis, you know, get in the St. Louis area, you know, figure out a style of play that might get more consistent wins. So I think that's a good position. I agree with you. Weber just had to figure out where to settle. And K-State had to find somebody who would be a big splash when Martin left. And I agree. I'm not sure how South Carolina fits into Martin other than the money. You know, sometimes it's okay to build where you are. And I just think the way the situation was handled with the suspension, I think kind of, you know, affected Martin. And he's an emotional guy. And I think that might have drove him to make a decision that he's probably 60-40 or 70-30. And sometimes you don't make emotional decisions like that. I'm not sure South Carolina is a place to land for all the reasons that that you talked about. In some ways, I think the best hire is Danny Manning that you talked about at Tulsa, because I think he's on his way up. I think he's been waiting, preparing for this. And Tulsa, everybody knows, Tulsa is like a feeding ground. It's like the launching point for coaches. It's a great place to get started. You know, Tulsa was that one of those original mid-majors, right, where a lot of people came out, a lot of coaches were kind of that coaching tree at Tulsa.
Yeah, Tulsa and VCU are those places where you get a lot of guys using that as a springboard. And then and those institutions pride themselves on finding mm-hmm. young coaches who have a future and hiring those coaches, and that's what they look for. And they like that profile of being that kind of a program where, you know, it's almost like Cal going into a living room and being like, hey, you come here, I'm going to get you to the next level. VCU and Tulsa kind of do the same thing with the coaches that they hire, saying, hey, mm-hmm. you come here, you work for us, we'll get you set up, we'll give you the things you need to be successful, with the idea that we want you to leave in a couple of years. We'd love to have mm-hmm. you here for 20, but we're expecting that we're going to give you the resources to do what you need to do, and you're going to be moving on. And we'll find another mm-hmm. guy who's just as talented, and we're going to give him those same tools to be successful. And that's kind of how they built their profile as a mid-major. Like, hey, this is a hotbed for young coaches. You come in, you get coached up, you work on our staff, you're going to have an opportunity to take over. You take over, you move on, and the next guy, the next man steps up. And that's the way those programs have kind of marketed themselves to coaches, which I think is a genius way of doing things. So with that, I want to get in, as we close out the after-hours section, D. Wills, your top 20 songs of all time. I need 10 through 6. Lay it on us.
10 through 6. Wow. You know, I don't have the delivery, you know, that the Game Changer has. I'm like D. New. I just kind of felt like I was about to hand my list over to you. So I was going to send you a text message with the list. I was going to try and figure out how to do it. But at number 10, I thought about it. I actually had to make some adjustments. I had to go back and reflect. And I got to pay homage to where I'm from, Michigan. But this song, and it's already been mentioned, but I just think it's incredible because it has so many layers to it. At 10 is Stan. I think Eminem is not only an incredible lyricist, but he can take you to places. And I think in Stan, I mean, if you think about how the emotions change, it's like a crescendo through the song. And by the time you get to the end of it, you hope – every time you listen to it, you hope it's a different ending, right? That's an amazing song. It's like, don't do it. Every time you listen to the song, you hope that it's going to be a different ending. Yeah, that's how creative he is. Nothing but a G thing. What can I say? What I like is when Dre comes in. Well, I'm creeping. When he comes in.
About got kept because my beeper kept beeping.
Yes,
right. He's rapping about a beeper.
Yeah.
Back then it was fresh. Right now it's like, oh, snap, he's rapping about beeper? You remember beeper?
Yeah. It's so much going.
So that's number 9. Gin and Juice. To me, it's like it's a hood anthem. It's like we gonna relax. It's a song you gotta play just every summertime. It just feels like you just need to play it. If you ain't never played it, when you play it, it don't matter when you play it. Everybody goes, oh, it's like, that's my song kind of reaction to Gin and Juice.
And it's also one of those songs that's like instructions.
That's right.
I'm going to tell you how to get down right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you what you need to do, okay? Get you some Gin and Juice, get on your bike, and roll down the street.
Yeah.
I'm going to just break it down. I'm going to make it real easy for you. I'm going to give you the instructions. It's a great song.
Yes, I mean that West Coast influence is there. You can tell that kind of as someone who loved hip hop and I was DJing at the time or whatever, it was something that just kind of turned a little bit. This one is mine, and this is where I am generationally at 7. I'm Bad, LL Cool J. If you hear the beginning of this song, through the whole song, it feels like LL is going through your chest.
Yes,
this is Bennett.
Yes,
LL.
Yes.
It's like. This is like the essence of what it meant to be an MC.
You're getting me hyped right now, man. You're getting me hyped.
The delivery.
You're getting me hyped.
You know, each of these songs, I went back and just listened to a little excerpt before the show, and when I played this, it was like he came through my chest. And most young people don't understand how fierce LL was in the beginning.
Nobody
of his
can
term.
Rap quite like I can. I take a lot of bound man, put his face in the sand.
In the sand.
And he said, I'm bad.
Oreo, he Cool J cookies. I'm bad.
Cool
you give me ice.
Cool J.
Number six. And this one is, and y'all didn't step on it, but I absolutely love this song. And I was debating where to put it in this group, but I just absolutely love it. And, you know, Nas is my guy. New York State of Mind. It's one of those songs again. He just went in and out of stuff on me so hard on it. But it's one of those things. And Game Changer, you said it. It's not just a delivery, but the beat, the whole package of it. When you, I remember you talking about Jesus Walk. I love the way you describe it, because it's not just for this song. It's not just the delivery had, but just the music that everything. I love this song. That's number six for me. So, Stan, Nothing But a G Thing, Jen and Juice, I'm Bad, and then New York State of Mind.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, that sound, man, that's solid. That's a solid five right there, man.
Yeah.
That's meat, potatoes, five. I can't get mad at none of that.
I tell you what.
Ain't no candy on that plate at all.
I tell you what, D-Wells, you know, that LL Cool J reference, I'm Bad. You know, back then, these cats would get so hyped and make videos that they had to wear sweatpants. Okay?
That's right.
You know, like they had to wear sweatpants. And, you know, sometimes I think of, like when you were saying I'm Bad, it just gets you so hyped. You know, when I hear like Lil Wayne, 6 foot, 7 foot, or a Millie, where he just kind of spinning, it takes me back to high school where we kind of got the cypher going. And fellas just in the middle of a crowd in a group just going back and forth. And somebody busts that rod and everybody just, it's like you at the Rucker, everybody just go crazy running around. Well, you know, to me, when I hear a hot rhyme like, you know, Wayne 6 foot, 7 foot, it takes me back to that.
Yes,
that was the norm in music. Like, that was the norm. When you have a cat like Busta Rhymes just spit a verse and, you know, I mean, it was almost like, today, you could just toss the mic on the ground and walk off the stage like Mos Def did in Brown Sugar. You know, that's what lyrics was about. I mean, you just toss the mic off and you walk, you know, toss it and walk off.
Absolutely, man. It's those moments, man. That's why it's fun to do this list, man. Going through this list because, you know, like I said, man, I have like a ever growing mixtape. That started when I was in college, and these are the songs that the core songs are the songs I used to listen to before I would hoop, before we had a game. I'd get in the locker room, and I had my little routine, my little ritual that I'd go through before the game, and I would listen to these songs, and I've added songs throughout the year, and I'm Bad is one of those songs. It gets the people going. It gets the game changer going. But absolutely, man, it's like a walk down memory lane. That's why I like doing this. So we'll keep that rolling. We're going to keep rolling with that next week as we hit our top five. We'll try and fit that in. If we have time, if we do not, we'll carry it over to the week after that. We're going to really massage and finesse this thing out and just let it roll. Let it roll, flow naturally, because we have some big guests coming on next week. So feel free to check in with us. Again, Cecil Youngblood will be joining us next week. Check in again. Real Sports Guys, RSG Renegade Radio, hit us up, www.realsportguys.com. We got the Ross, the Rosé taking us out. We're going to let that ride for a moment.